Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in a few ways. One is the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. And the other one, and the most efficient way, is to enter iTunes, enter Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. So I've been promoting my own show here in the Fort Worth, Dallas area. It sucked away all my time, and it kept me from watching the fights full and being able to give you guys a really good show. Again, I love that when my show comes together and I execute it well, and you know the fighters are happy, but the difficulty of dealing with the commission, of dealing with fighters dropping out, it is a headache to say the least. I am simply grateful that I have the show behind me, and I've been able to get back to kickboxing and promoting the sport that I love, because it has been a crazy few weeks since since I haven't been able to podcast. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it. A lot of what I'm talking about today is going to be why kickboxing is such a wonderful and beautiful game, and I really think that as I look at this as a whole, that people really enjoy it, enjoy the podcast, because if you've been watching kickboxing the last 3 weeks, kickboxing and Muay Thai, you've seen some really, really good action, and you've seen the best of the best go down, throw down. So here we go. Going to go ahead and start with K1 Max. The main card, Daryl Verdonk gets a victory over Hiromi Wajima. Wajima's had a rough go of it lately. I think Wajima was one of the guys who they were probably thinking at minimum would get to the 8th round, and don't be surprised if he gets the wild card, because there's no Japanese representative in the K1 Max Final 8. But man, Daryl Verdonk really emerged. And this is something I want to talk about with this whole 8. There are new names that emerge, and that is the importance of the K1 Max tournament. These are not names, you know, for the most part, that people know on an international stage. They're not names that you heard a lot. But I was there when no one knew who Bukao Pol Pramuk is, and at that time, no one knew that he would probably have one of the great kickboxing resumes of all time, if not the best. In my personal opinion, it's the best. But you had no idea that when he won that tournament, how special of a guy that he was going to be. You didn't know who he was. He would not have been your pick going into it. You would have picked a Masada, or you would have picked a Kraus. No one knew who this guy was. And then the opportunity came and he was made a star. And people knew of Mike Zambides, but when he beat Albert Kraus, that's when the whole world was like, okay, who is this guy? You know, the thing that made the K1 Max special is it helped create new stars, people that we hadn't heard from or seen of. And that was the wonder of what happened in Japan this weekend. So Daryl Verdonk came out, really burst on the scene. Great kickboxing. This was one-sided. Hiromi was not in this at all. Daryl Verdonk moves on to the 8-man field. Just an awesome, awesome fighter. And he burst on the scene. He's fought before, but this is a platform for people to see just how talented this young man is. Next, we have Ouyang Fang as he gets his victory over Pask Shroff. Fang's body work was absolutely fantastic. He scored a knockdown with the boxing, but he was so consistent with that lead hand to the body. Good combos upstairs that led to the body shot downstairs. Good body kicks. It was a very clean, complete performance. He moves on, and he's going to be, again, I think in my personal opinion, he has the tools to get to the end. But, you know, you never know. Of course, in kickboxing and tournaments and injuries can happen. But I was very impressed with his kickboxing skill. He did a fantastic job. Viktor Akimov gets a victory, spinning back fist victory over Rei Nakajima. It is hard to land a spinning back fist cleaner than Akimov landed it. It literally, like, if you look at the replay of it, we're talking fist right across the face. Like, it is as, like, I'm like laughing in my head as I think about it, because it was that clean of a shot. Like, he timed it so well, got the fist right. I mean, just perfectly timed. You know, sometimes when you have these happen, the thing that happens is the elbow scores or the forearm scores, and you're like, hey, that's questionable, or hey, that's illegal. And you know, of course, you understand when that happens, but this was just a clean, perfect, it's hard to script it any better than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was really good. So he'll move on. Now, clearly, there's going to be a little bit more doubt with him because, you know, even though he gets the victory, it was he did not show enough skill for people to automatically be like, this is going to be the guy to win the tournament. But I think that that was a fantastic, you know, performance and a fantastic statement. So he moves on to the eight-man field. They had Lucy as he continues his dominance. Man, is he proven to be one of the best kickboxers on the planet as he beats Sena Kiramine. Sena got it started where he did a spinning back fist, completely missed everything, you know, pretty much ends up, you know, striking the air with his spinning back fist. And then he kind of stopped. And to exactly what he was supposed to do, Lucy walked right up to him and dropped him. Dropped him. Even though he wasn't looking at him, he didn't hit him on the back of the head. This punch came from standing behind him and punched him right in the jaw. And he goes down for the first knockdown. Completely clean. Completely clean. Can't do a spinning back fist and wait for the ref to step in and allow you to reface your guy. I definitely think that this was one of those things where, and again, everybody's different. Everybody's different. But my personal opinion, I was extremely pleased with that call by the ref, letting that go, not letting that be disqualification or anything like that. And then as they went back to their feet, one of the cleanest 3-2 kills for the KO that you're ever going to see. Lucy is that deal. He is talented. And I got to watch him live in Japan back in December. They got something. They got something with him. There needs to be a K1 event in China with him as the main event. He's a star. He's got the look. He is ripped up. He is as talented as they come. Like, I feel like you should try to get him at some period of time against a Rico Verheerven. I think he is talented enough to give Rico a push because he is killing guys right now. And I feel like the world is missing how talented this guy is. And he's not just winning. There are no scorecards needed. He is stopping people. He is a phenom. And I want to see more of this guy. I want to see him on the world stage. If there's ever a joint K1 glory event, it's got to be C versus Rico Verheerven. He's that talented of a dude. Next, and again, in the world of upsets this time, Saho gets a victory over Antonio Prifty. Prifty, of course, defeated Kana last year, and I was there. I was there. I got to watch that live, and I was thinking, man, Antonio Prifty is a talented girl. Combinations to kicks to both sides with both legs. Very good flow, very good distance. Saho had her money. Saho realized she had an advantage with the close-range boxing. She really put on a great performance, and it put the title returns to Japan. I thought that Prifty really made a great account for herself. I just think that it was Saho's night, and sometimes when it comes to winning a title, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to both of you are talented, but on this day, I'm the best. And she was able to prove that, and she gets the victory, and she is your new K1 champion. Then we go to Kekber. I've messed this name up several times. Mezhnyunsky, as he gets a victory over Stoyan Karpovlinsky. Karpovlinsky is a longtime Glory kickboxing veteran. Glory, of course, is dropping their 70 kg, 154-ish division. So Karpovlinsky is out there, and Kekber was. He just won a clean kickboxing fight. He was the better kickboxer. Stoyan Karpovlinsky is very talented. I just think that he ran into a guy who, and Stoyan's been in the game for a while. He's been fighting Glory for what? 6-7 years? Maybe longer? Like, that's how long he had before he moved on into this. And Kekber really put on a great performance. Big time W. Awesome stuff there by him. And again, like I said, new stars. Viktor Akhmov, new star. Daryl Verdonk, new star. Guys are emerging that you didn't know about. In what would be considered an upset, Romano Backboard gets a victory over Tanachai. Tanachai, of course, would have been picked to be one of the favorites going into the tournament. His youth and his physicality, I'd say. Physicality more than youth, I would say. he wasn't able to really threaten heavy with the boxing that he would have needed to beat backboard. And again, it was a close fight, goes to extra round, split decision, could have gone either way, very, very close. I think that in the way that Bacall used to be hurt back in the days, where he would revert to the body kicks as opposed to the boxing, I think that that kind of, you know, thought process probably led to Thanachai not getting the victory, as Romano continued to push forward and really work with his power boxing. So Romano moves forward, and then the last tournament fight, Dangu Silva defeats Riku TKO round one in a landslide. Silva, Brazilian, huge man is this guy. I think they had him, he's 6'2", 6'3", maybe taller as far as how tall he is to the division. He's going to be one of the favorites. How you're going to deal with that length is going to matter. And he didn't have the best defense, but it didn't matter because he absolutely just ran Riku over. He looked fantastic. So there's your tournament field. It was a fun night of fights. I want to go ahead and get to some of the intermission extras, because we had a kind of K1 versus Rise theme. Taito Gunji defeats Kyusuke Moguchi in the extra round split decision. Very close there. Kyuki Mayuzaka gets a victory over Miyu Sugawara. I've said the name a million times on the show. I can't believe I hesitated today. Sugawara gets a victory there. Yuki Ogawa gets a extra round split decision over Hiyumi Hitachi. Shoki Kanada gets a victory over Deki Teodo. Teira, TKO finished there, and then Yuta Matsuyama gets a victory over Andre Horiguchi. This was 4-1 in favor of K1 for the K1 versus Rise events. And unfortunately, I've got to bring this up. A couple more of a note on the undercard. Breaks my heart to have to say this. Hyota Suzuki gets the victory over Koyo Araba. Just too much time off. Koyo Araba was one of the best when he was in his prime, but that was a big gap for him to not be competing. But Suzuki gets the victory there. And I won't go through the whole prelims, because if you've ever gone to a K1 show before, it's like 10 hours of fights. It's a full day. So congratulations to the winners, and congratulations to K1, who in the previous events they have lost in some of the bigger fights. So in the match, if you look at the undercard, there was a lot of victories done and by Rise in those previous events, and in this one K1 got the advantage. Here's my problem. All of a sudden I hear that they want to protest. All of a sudden I hear that they don't like the idea of K1 getting that victory, and they want to protest what the judges were doing. They said they don't know if they want to do another K1 event because the judges weren't fair. I was like, hey, K1 sat there and they lost split decisions too. Masaki Inoue lost a split decision at the match. And that was one of their K1's main guys at that time. So I thought that they should have just taken this in grace. It didn't go their way. It's not the end of the world. Didn't go your way. Move on. Congratulations to the one that won. That's how I see this. But I stand alone there, I guess, because that is not how they viewed it. No, sir. They were upset. They are greatly upset by this decision. So it happens. We're going to go ahead and move on to the aforementioned Bacall. Now Bacall Benchimek, of course, just known throughout the world as Bacall. And again, there were other kickboxing fights on this card. Diochi Kihira gets a victory over Yuki Koshiaka. And then we had Shun Motsuyama gets a victory over Shin Sakurai. KO, that was a fun one. Uemura gets a KO victory over Aenoda. Now again, these are not super high level. They were solid fights for sure, but the story of kickboxing, I felt like they were just solid fights, not necessarily something that tells the story of who the best in the world is. Yuya defeats Masuya Jakai by TKO. That one's fine. Yuya is the name that you will hear. But when we get Bacall Benchimek, when you see him get that KO victory over Kimura, it was just awesome to see. And it was awesome to see for a lot of ways. I'd say the number one way that I really, enjoyed it was Bacall at least admitted afterwards He said Minoru hit him when he was throwing a kick, and he said it was one of the hardest punches he ever felt without going down. But the key was he walked him down and he scored the body work, the boxing to the body. You know, the still he worked the low kick, of course, because Minoru locks in so much on his power boxing that his defense isn't the best. But I felt like Bacall broke him down with consistent low kick and body shot work, closes the distance, and then he cleans him up with a one-hitter quitter, and the whole crowd went wild. They just, even at this age, 41, 40, you know, going on 42, Bacall's special. He is the superstar. You cannot quantify how great this guy is and how much he's done for kickboxing. Kickboxing was made better by his presence, and he really stretched the sport. He would still be, in my personal opinion, Bacall is the best kickboxer of all time. Just, you know, it's him or Tyrone Spong. Those are my, you know, 1A, 1B. You know, like, I really, really feel like his resume, what he did for the sport. Clearly, I talk about Tyrone Spong all the time because what he accomplished moving up the weight class, and it wasn't just that he moved up the weight class, he was stopping guys as he moved up the weight class. I really give him his due. He really did a lot of work there. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete, phenomenal fighter. So I definitely give him his love. But Kyle, you know, Benchimek is, I mean, I cannot describe, you know, whether you want to call it swag or aura. There's something different about this guy. Something different about this guy. And what he's done in this sport, it's not normal. It is special. And it has been a joy to kind of watch him move up the ranks and put on the performances that he has. So go ahead and move on to, I guess I'll start looking at the one. Well, let me look at the Rogers Stadium and their World Series that they've been putting on. I won't look at the whole card, but I will look at the top. Jovicic gets a victory over Barak. Poyraz, TKO with elbows. I mean, he got this done quick. This was a violent, violent version of Jovicic. He is a super talent. He, of course, brings it every single time he's out there. But, you know, after the Rodriguez wars, it was cool to see him go out there and absolutely blow someone out. Another fight from the Rajendran Stadium is Kuntzenlek is the future. I mean, Kuntzenlek, I saw this. He was born, just the way they worded it made me laugh. But I was going through X or Twitter, and someone said, Kuntzenlek was born in 2005. And when they said it that way, it just made me laugh, you know, meaning he's 19 years old. But, like, he's a talent, and he is so skilled, and he is so crafty. He is the future. He is the, for sure, something that I've been talking about a lot on this podcast. Who's going to be the stars that move us into the future? Kuntzenlek is for sure one of those stars. He is a crafty, crafty guy. He's got great vision. He's got great speed. It is so tough to play a kick, you know, striking game with him. He's as elite as they come. He is special. And I'm excited that he's here and he's fighting on a regular basis. And I hope that the platforms continue to grow because he's that good. He's that good of a guy. Next, we're going to go ahead and talk about the Superman as he gets another victory over Murat Grigoryan. If I remember correctly, I think they are 3-1 for Superman. A lot of controversy with, you know, what's going on in ONE Championship. And, of course, Murat Grigoryan, he's just doing a bunch of rematches. There's no new matches for him, really. And if I look back at this, we have what? Sitichai, who he's fought a million times, and then we've got this opportunity with Superbond, who he's fought, and I don't think that people feel like it's special, you know, or he feels like it's special. It feels like the, you know, the fighting, you know, pool is lower. He asked for different opportunities. He sees the K1 Maxes happen, and he's not in it. Once upon a time, he was. He asked to be released. He asked to be released from his contract in January, and they did not let him go. And then you see him get this interim title fight opportunity. Now, of course, is this like, you know, putting a, you know, a Band-Aid over a well? We don't know. All I know is this fight came together. Superbon proved to be the superior kickboxer, able to outscore him. Still, Murat Grigoryan had his moments because his pressure combo to low kick you know, work will always make him admirable. He'll always be tough. But it was just unfortunate that that's kind of where you know, where we ended up with what's going on in ONE Championship right now, and another story like this coming soon. But Superbon gets the victory over Murat Grigoryan. Not sure what's next for Grigoryan. I hear that they're doing another 70 kg tournament, but by the sounds of it, it's gonna be all the same dudes. At least when they did last time, there were a couple of older guys, Andy Sauer and stuff like that. I'm not sure how they're gonna play it this time, but they got to follow what K1's doing, and there needs to be some new names in there. It wouldn't be a bad idea to do, you know, rematches with Superbon and Sidichai and Grigoryan, having them fight each other so that there could be another person, a new name for them to fight down the road. This is just my personal opinion on it. I know most people are completely fine with, hey, the new guys, the old guys, and the new guys should fight. And if the old guys are there staying, that's fine. They earned it. And if the new guys beat them, they earned it. But I think you want new names. You want new names to grow your brand. And I think that they have, the division is stale. And I think that they got to get some new blood and some new names in there. And I'm excited to see where this heads. Some other decisions of note. Nang Oh gets back in the win column against Culabdon. Fantastic victory there. We had Jake Peacock, one of my favorites. Absolute one-sided beatdown over Kohei Shinjo. I like Jake. He's a good guy. I've talked to Jake many times. I am all in on Jake Peacock. The more opportunities, the better. I hope that this isn't something where he fights and I don't hear about him again for the next 6 months. Get him right back in there. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. Head kick KO for Shadow over Eric Heher. And let me see. Comtet. Fairtex gets a victory over Kong Shai. We had some fun stuff. Fun stuff. Muang Thai, unfortunately, still struggling. He loses Nakrab Fairtex. You know, Muang Thai had a great run in his time. He's just older, and the wars have caught up to him, and he's not what he used to be, but, you know, glad that he's on the card and still competing. Going to go ahead and go for another thing that's new guys beating old. This is one where ONE Championship did get it. Alex Nicholas gets a victory over Reagan Ursel. The difference would be a knockdown. Now, scorecards had it even. 47-47 on two of the scorecards, but they had advantage. And advantage usually means if there's a knockdown or something like that, it goes in the favor of the guy who scored the knockdown. Alex Nicholas, the main thing he was able to handle when Reagan Ursel started to pick it up in rounds 4 and 5. He was still able to get his boxing off. Really, he carried the early rounds, and Ursel carried the late rounds. But even in the rounds that Ursel took, Nicholas wasn't out of him. He kept finding his offense. He was, you know, even though he fought backwards for 4 and 5, I think that he was still able to find his boxing and his kicks. I think that Ursel was trying to set up the jump D, trying to set up the power shots around the corner. Just Nicholas was strong, and he held up. The knockdown in the second, where he caught Ursel while he was striking, that was the difference. And Ursel did a great job of recovering because he went right back to work afterwards. But Alex Nicholas is your new lightweight championship. Now, lightweight for them, of course, is 170. They moved all the weight classes up, you know, after they had the issue where they had the champion who had passed away in the weight cutting. They put in a lot of parameters to change that, and Alex Nicholas is your lightweight champion as opposed to what would have been your welterweight champion. So fantastic job for Alexis, and I'm excited to see what's happening moving forward. Outside of that, I also have, what do we got here? So Black gets a victory over Vladimir Kuzmin. Dennis Pirok. Always love Dennis Pirok. And this Pirok, this kid can fight. He gets a victory over Jacob Smith. And I think I'll round it up there. But unfortunately, I am not done talking about ONE Championship. So the last thing that I will finish the show with is talking about the Iman Barlow situation. Of course, you guys know I've known Iman Barlow since she was very young, since she was a teenager, 15, 16 years old. I wrote about her for World Muay Thai Magazine. Like, it was, you know, it's crazy to watch her grow up throughout the years. We're talking about someone who's got 200 plus fights, who has always been down to fight. And all of a sudden, she announces in this really well-done video her retirement. And the reason why she announced her retirement is for 8 months before it was a whole lot of her father posting, hey, one championship, fight us. Like, let us get a fight. Let us get an opportunity. And so they have not used her. They have not given her opportunity. So then they asked her, hey, well, then can we leave? Can we get out of the contract if you've got nothing for us? Now, again, this is something that I learned from Sergey Mosoboyev. I got to talk to him, and he talked about his difficulties with one championship. And the early contract they had was a one-year contract with three fights. That was when he fought. So after he was done, he says, hey, I'm out of here. I'm not dealing with these guys anymore. And that's how he ended up becoming Glory champion and getting signed to Glory. But he was one of the first guys to really speak up and say, hey, they're not fighting us enough. And so that was, you know, back in the day. Flash forward to the future, and Iman Barlow signs. I remember I was at Glory still. I was trying to sign him on Barlow. And I remember them telling me that I have gave Barlow a better offer than the one championship offer. But they'd already promised her to them. And again, that's just the game. They were being honest and true to their word. And they looked at the opportunity and they decided to say with one championship there, because they had agreed that they were going to sign there. No problem whatsoever. And again, it's hindsight. And don't have any problem with that decision. That's just fighting. That's negotiating. That's how it always going to be. So the main thing that I tell people is I really think that the this stage in the conversation, I was happy for her, go off to one championship, win their title. I was super, super pumped. At that point, I believe she has fought, what, three times? I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up as I'm talking to you guys. Iman Barlow. Because I want to make sure that I am right. I want to make sure that I am for sure right on my understanding of Barlow and how many times she's competed. She has competed for them twice. She has beaten Ekaterina Vandereeven, and she's beaten Daniela Lopez. So let me go. I'm going to double check, make sure I'm not wrong here. Okay. Let's bring it up. Okay. So when her and I had that conversation, it was in 2019. That's when I was like, she had come by a Glory event in Florida, and I was like, hey man, you know, just sent an offer. I said, okay, if I send one more offer. We just hung out as friends. Afterwards, I asked, could I, you know, I was me, her mom, and we went out and we hung out and I took care of them. I, you know, got them front row to the fights for Glory. And afterwards, I said, hey, can I send you guys one more offer? And then I sent them an offer, and the guy got back to me and he said, hey, we are going to, you know, we already made this commitment. He says, your offer was good. He says, your offer was better than our one championship offer, but I gave them my word. So I respected and I kept that distance. That is how the sport happens. That is normal combat sport negotiation. It's one fighter. It's a football player choosing one team over the other. It's just kind of how this game goes. So this was in 2019, if I remember correctly. That's when all this happened. So it was right before COVID picked up whatever. So this was in 2019 that we had this conversation. We are now in 2024. She has fought for one championship twice. She's fought for them twice. She had the Daniela Lopez, as I mentioned before, and the Ekaterina Vandereeva fight. So when she fought for Flores, that fight was in England. That was in her backyard. The other opportunity, the Road to One Muay Thai Grand Prix, that is not an official one event. It was just kind of like more of a co-promoting kind of thing using the name. I look back at that and that opportunity, and that was in London, England. And that's it. She's not been able to fight all these years. Signed in 2019. We're in 2024. And she has two fights. So then the news came out that the title fight was offered to Sundell. Like, it was offered to her. Like, hey, like that was the fight that the one championship wanted to make. And you know, Sundell came out, she posted that she was offered the fight three times in September, and she signed the contract three times, and that Iman didn't sign. Like, that's come out. Here's my problem with that, and I posted it on Twitter. When we talk about Iman Barlow, she fought Sophia Olofsson. It was her last loss. She fought her five rounds in Sweden in her backyard. So she goes to her backyard, okay? She has fought Therese Gunnarsson. She has fought Ashley Nichols, who she fought in her backyard. So she fought in Canada there. She has fought Maria Lobo. She's fought, and again, I don't want to just keep running down, you know, her names. And I mentioned Anissa Mexen, who she fought in the Infusion reality show. But she's fought Mexen. She's fought Gunnarsson, as I mentioned before. And a lot of these fights are, she's traveling and she's fighting these girls in their backyard. Like, she is fighting them wherever the fight is. She's going to go ahead and take on the fight and fight them there. And she's done this just, you know, Laura Fernandez, like some of the best of the best women. Brooke Farrell, that was another one. That was in Australia. She's fighting the best girls, and a lot of times she's fighting them on the road. She has zero history of ducking anyone. And I remember when the Tiffany Von Soos situation came up. When Tiffany Von Soos situation came up, I will never forget that she said, hey, right now my family did not want to sign a long-term deal with Glory. But everyone knew that, because remember, initially she was supposed to be in the tournament, and the tournament had the winner. She says she would be down to fight Tiffany Von Soos in just a one-off, just a single fight. Didn't need to be for a title, you know, just, hey, that's the fight that people want to see. Let's do that fight. So she spends her whole life, her whole career, fighting whoever, being down to fight whoever. And all of a sudden, she has decided to say no to Sandel. And I've seen her post about fighting for the title. Sandel was the champion. I have no idea why this was what is decided by one championship. I don't know if this is contractual. I don't know if this is, because sometimes you send a contract to one person, you don't send it to the other. Like, there are different tactics that people use to get fights to happen. And again, I don't know. I do not know what happened in the one championship situation. I cannot stress to you enough, I do not know what decision was made there. I can only say to you that I am very, very, very confident that if this came down to, will you fight Sandel for the title, I don't think Iman Barlow is like, I'm afraid of Sandel, I'm not going to fight her. I just cannot see that as a reality. The only thing that makes sense to me is there's something behind it. If there was, hey, you fight Sandel, but you got to sign another 6-year contract. That's the language that you're not seeing. Anytime you hear about some fighter, and again, this is every UFC, whatever, sometimes when these things are delayed, it's because of what is attached to them. And that's in all of sports. So we'll have to finish the show on this unfortunate note, because Iman was truly one of the greats. She's one of the greats to ever do this. She fought pro at 4 years old. She's now 30 years old. And she has, as I meant, she's gone at 11 fight win streak right now. And her losses are Olofsson in Sweden, Anissa Mexen, the Eva Naranjo fight, which I still think that she won. But nevertheless, she's fought everybody. She has fought everybody. She's just been out there, putting herself out there, fighting these elite girls. And not to mention, she fought Tierra Brandt in America, and that was in the World Games World Championships. That was 2022. Amy Perny, like, she's got victory over her. She's got a draw over her. She's fought the best of the best. She's had an all-time great career. Resume-wise, when you say, who'd you fight, who'd you beat, when'd you beat them, Iman Barlow is in the top five, guaranteed. And most people are thinking, full rules Muay Thai, she's the best female ever. The fact that you would say that she has decided that she doesn't want to fight for the title and we're going to put her on the shelf and do it, it just means there's something that I'm not seeing. There's something missing there. And the only thing that makes sense to me is that it's a contract situation, is that they're asking for a re-sign. And maybe her family's like, hey, we'll re-sign, but you need to guarantee 3 fights every year. You know what I'm saying? Something like that has to be the issue. But it just doesn't make any sense to me at all that they said, hey, Iman, will you fight Sandel? And Iman Barlow was like, nope, I'm afraid of her, I don't want to fight. Makes zero sense to me. So, all right, so that's, I'm going to wrap the show up. God bless. Thank you guys for listening. I will try to be back next week. not only did we have her, Janet Todd also walked away from the sport. I'm going to do a slow breakdown of Janet Todd's career and what made her special. Really going to focus on that next week. So the episode will be fully dedicated to just her and Iman Barlow. I will actually reach out to her to make sure it's okay to do that type of episode, because I want to make sure that she is all the way retired, if that's the situation, or if just she's retired unless, you know, and you never know. So God bless. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. And I will try to get regular again. Just that fight promotion thing just sucked my soul. It's just so much work. So thank you so much. God bless. Peace.